616, your home for all fans Marvel main continuity. Hello, everybody. Welcome back after a bit of a hiatus. It's been like 3 weeks or something. We didn't end up doing any of that wrestling content in between that we teased the last time, but oh well. Welcome back. This is episode 80, big 80 of Route 616. Pretty cool number there. It's wild that we've done so many of these, but we continue on. Hopefully going forward, we will be able to stabilize it back to our weekly schedule. And if not weekly, we'll try to do them bi-weekly at the very least. But we'll see what goes on as life goes on. We are missing Dan this week.
Technical difficulties. See. He has not died despite what his advancing age may indicate.
Yes, exactly. I'm glad Bill summed that up. But Bill is here, as was the voice you just heard and possibly saw speak if you're watching this on YouTube.
Hello, everyone.
So yeah, technical difficulties in Dan's end, so we are missing him again, but the show goes on, I suppose. At least nobody fell from the rafters, but anyways. Yeah, I don't know. Dark. I didn't really... Yeah, that was Derek. It just kind of came out. I don't really know. I didn't really prepare anything to talk about this time that was some pop culture stuff. I mean,
only real pop culture thing I've noticed is a trend of right wingers being convinced that Starship Troopers isn't satire.
Interesting. I mean, that's been
a big debate online. It got going because of the whole Divers 2 thing, and everyone was saying that was satire, and they're all mad about it. And then people were like, I bet they think that Starship Troopers isn't satire either, and sure enough, they think it's not satire, despite the humans being dressed like literal Nazis.
Wow. I heard about some of the Helldivers stuff, but yeah. I mean, there's been excitement around the Alien franchise recently. It just got put back in the theaters, the original, into some theaters.
Why are you telling me this when one of the theaters is not mine?
I think it's like very select theaters in the States or something that are doing it.
Yeah, I know. It's just like, I would love to see the original Alien in theaters.
And so that's been causing excitement, plus then the upcoming new movie called Alien Romulus, which I wanted Dan to be here to say this, but I saw a cool clip online about how they had a what's it called when something's not CGI but is realistic?
practical,
thank you. They had a practical face hugger and it looked really cool.
Oh, nice. That encourages me a lot, because I've been hurt more than I've been helped by the Alien franchise. So I was fairly skeptical, but if they're going to do practical effects on it, that's a huge strike in its favor, because if it was just like rushed out trend cashing schlock like most of the Aliens have been, they wouldn't put that level of craftsmanship into it.
Yeah, if that's a sign of things to come, I'm actually excited for that movie now, because the clip I saw of this practical facehugger, it looked sweet.
Yeah, and I mean, the original one was practical, and it worked.
Yeah. So.
But yeah, so far there's been two good Alien movies and two okay Alien movies. So my hopes were not super high.
Yeah. It would be cool if this one changed that, but won't get our hopes too high.
I was expecting it to maybe just be another okay one, because they haven't done a bad one since, like, either the Alien versus Predators, if you count those, or without it, Alien 4.
Yeah.
The other ones were just okay, but, at least inoffensive. And so.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I just remembered. So if you like our talking about the Alien franchise, we actually have a whole bonus episode about the Alien franchise Didn't we do the Alien, or was it Predator we did? Maybe we did Predator.
Which no, it one was did Alien. We do?
It was Alien? I thought it was. Perfect.
We figured a franchise where there was one good movie, because that was back before Prey came out.
Yeah.
So we figured that a franchise with one good movie was probably not prime topic.
Yeah, we kind of did one or the other, and Alien was the better topic at the time.
Yeah. It would be different now, because Prey was a whole lot better than any of the modern Alien movies. Like, we're talking since Aliens.
Yeah. So, yeah, we have a
flop. I'd have to watch them back to back, but I'm not convinced that Prey isn't better than Aliens either.
That's a pretty bold statement right there. But
I feel comfortable making it. I think Prey was better than the original Predator. Like, the original Predator has nostalgia, but just as an objective rating of the movie, without the fact that I saw it the first time at 13, I think Prey is probably the better movie.
I think as a full package deal, you're probably correct in that statement. To be honest,
it captures the horror movie more than anything starring actors like Jesse Ventura and Arnold Schwarzenegger can do.
Yeah. I guess to finish that plug, go check that out. We talked about the whole Alien franchise, plus added in the first Predator movies, since we weren't sure we were ever going to do a Predator one as well, and they were tied together anyway, so we did a bit of a tie together there.
Darkness and even more darkness.
We definitely all had some thoughts. I guess that's going to be an out of date episode now with this new Romulus movie coming out, but oh well.
I mean, you'll probably get the add on to that on whichever episode we record after Dan has seen Romulus.
Yeah, because I'm sure that's one that all of us will end up watching at some point, since we've seen all of them.
Yeah,
so.
But mine will probably be like 8 months later when it comes out on streaming, so we'll have already talked about it by then.
Same.
I don't think I'm going to pay movies, even with the practical face hugger. Unless I hear like a bunch of other good stuff, I don't think I'm paying movie theater prices for an Alien movie in 2024.
That's fair enough. I take forever to watch any new movie anyway. I still haven't seen a lot of new ones I wanted to see. Hell, I haven't even seen Terrifier 2, and that's been out for like 2 years now.
That might be a good thing.
That might be, yeah.
Terrifier 2 is not Terrifier. Like, it's not the worst, but they go so over the top that it kind of loses a lot of the charm of the original.
Yeah. I get what they're going for, but I don't know.
It's a thing I find with horror movies in general. A limited budget forces them to get creative and tends to make for better movies. And then they get the sequel with the big budget, and quite often it's a lot worse. Not even just horror movies. Same thing happened with Deadpool.
Yeah, I mean,
the first one had, like, no budget and was really good. And the second one, it's good. But a little bit of that, like, renegade edge is missing.
And I think that's why people like you and Dan like the first one so much better. Whereas I'm more general to, like, I really like both and actually have some edge on liking the second one more in some aspects. But
I think a lot of the good stuff in the second one is just stuff they did in the first one again.
Well, I think the second one has a better cast of characters, but I would say, for the full, if you don't care about that as much and just want Deadpool as at his best, then probably the first one is the better just Deadpool movie, because it was pretty straightforward plot, and he got his shit in, and it worked.
I mean, Domino is a great addition, and Yukio is a great addition. I hope they bring them both back for the MCU one. Although I really don't have a lot of confidence in the MCU taking Deadpool.
I don't know. I'm actually pretty excited for it still. I watched the trailer the other day. I
hope it's going to be good. I don't necessarily trust the brains behind the increasingly generic MCU output.
Yeah.
To understand what works in Deadpool, and I'm afraid that it's just going to be another MCU movie, but they say fuck a bunch in it.
It depends on how many hands are in the honeypot.
How much control does Ryan Reynolds retain?
Yeah.
If he's got creative control, it'll be good because he gets Deadpool. If it's just the MCU and he's just signed on as an actor and doesn't get to offer his input, then it's going to be terrible because I don't think they understand how to do edgy humor.
I actually just saw a thing today thinking of the MCU now, that apparently they've signed Wesley Snipes on to return as Blade during the Multiverse saga at some point.
I heard that years ago, so I'm not sure how true it is because it might just be a rumor.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm a little skeptical about that. Just because Wesley Snipes isn't exactly young anymore. And Blade's a vampire. He doesn't age. I'm not sure like an aging Wesley Snipes could pull it off. Unless they like CGI him back to looking young, which they might do, because it's the MCU, and they all use CGI for everything.
Yeah, I mean, they could do that, or, I mean, maybe they can excuse it since he's technically a half or whatever, however his... But I don't know how they did in that movie. I haven't watched the original movie, so I don't know if they fully did his character right either, where he's like the half vampire and blah blah blah. So
they call him the Daywalker in them, but I don't remember if that's because he's half and half, or if he's a full-blooded vampire that can just survive in daylight for some reason.
I at some point probably
I haven't get watched around those to movies those for movies. Years because I got really really angry about sunscreen.
And the third one's awful from what I hear, so.
Oh, it is. But it's fun awful. The problem with the first one is they tried to do this like fairly serious vampire action movie and the fucking vampires wear sunscreen go out in the daylight.
Yeah, that's something.
It's possibly the single dumbest decision I've ever seen in making a movie. I've seen compounding decisions be worse. But for one single decision.
Oh, shit. I'm just thinking if there's anything else that's relatively recent. I'm not thinking of anything, so we might be starting on.
We already covered then. Godzilla and Kong being painfully average, I think. Because I saw that. You
talked about that last time, I believe.
Yeah.
I mean, apparently the Fallout show is really good, but I haven't watched it. I'm not a fan of the memes even.
So I haven't watched it either. I'd like to. I love Fallout.
I guess all physical copies in the States or something are all sold out, so.
Probably. It's been killing things.
So that's been good. I don't know. I haven't really been paying attention to stuff, I guess. MCU, nothing's been going on. There's a surprising lack of content this year because of how much stuff got pushed back. I think Wolverine's actually the only movie. But that is a good thing. I think
that's actually really good.
Because they've started taking new directions on their stuff in development and stuff.
Yeah, if they have, because I think the reason everything became so generic in the MCU was they were just pumping out so much stuff that no one could be creative with any of it.
The strikes might have really actually helped the MCU.
It might save the MCU. Because if they have to take an extra year and rethink things, and like leave the scripts in the hands of different people without oversight, they'll come back feeling different.
Well, the prime example of it right now is they threw the whole direction they had for the Daredevil show returning out the window and got and restarted it with a new direction of and bringing everybody back in that was a part of the original and all that stuff. So,
yeah, that's a good choice because reaffirming. It would have been horrible if Daredevil came back and it's the same sort of light, wisecracking fair as the rest of the MCU. Daredevil was good because it was a dark, gritty show set in this environment.
Yeah, and that is also when that, I mean, that is that character at its core, too. He's a street-level, gritty hero, yeah. And that's when he works at his best.
Yeah, I mean, they got themselves diminishing returns because everyone in the Netflix series was a dark, gritty, street-level show.
Yeah.
So you had the same problem of no variety.
Yeah.
But
and that was a choice with the type of characters they were using. Plus, they wanted to do their version of the Defenders, which was going to be a whole group of street level.
I think probably the biggest offense, even worse than Iron Fist, was how badly they botched Luke Cage. Like
the first season is really good of Luke Cage.
It's a really good show. It's a really bad Luke Cage show.
Yeah, there's a. I think
that the character is not Luke Cage. He's like all glum and serious and moody.
Yeah,
and there's always like, even though the like Hero Fire and Power Man comics dealt with some pretty dark topics, there was always this...
Luke also always had a sense of optimism to him.
Yeah, there was always this lightness to it because they were based on 70s blaxploitation films. So they always kind of had this campy charm to them, whether he was like feuding with his coffee machine or stealing a hovercraft and going to Latveria to get $100 from Doom. Like, there was always some comedy to them. And then they do this grim, gritty, dark...
It might be more in line with his character as of the 2000s, but it's still a bit off. Because he still never fully gets that dark, even.
Yeah, and if his character goes that direction in the 2000s, that explains why I never liked Luke Cage until I started to read through.
Yeah, I mean, that could be it.
Because late 90s, early 2000s comics got obsessed with dark and gritty. And usually it wasn't done well.
Yeah. I think as if you already had problems with it in the first season, then it's probably good you didn't watch the second season, because they probably handled this character even worse there.
Yeah, and I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the first season of Luke Cage. I think it's a great show. I just don't think it's a good Luke Cage show.
Yeah.
If it was some other character, it would be a top three show of that entire MCU.
But boy, did he ever look like Luke Cage.
Later Luke Cage.
Yeah, true.
I'm still in the puffy yellow shirt and tiara and afro era.
Bill just wants the full 70s.
No, he can't do the full 70s anymore. No. His look needs to evolve. He needs to become the bald modern look.
Yeah, he does.
Because otherwise, you're moving into Squirrel Girl levels of goofiness. Like, yeah. If someone's still dressing like that in 2024.
But, when you come on the podcast? No.
I would 100% do that if I thought I could pull it off without looking racist.
Yeah. That is the issue.
Because even without, you know, blackface or so, just getting a fake afro wig would be pretty racist.
Yeah.
And you can't do the tiara without the afro.
Yeah, true. What's the point? Oh, fuck. Well, we've gone 20 minutes now, shockingly, talking about random bullshit, so let's get into the comics. We're doing four Thor comics. We're transitioning right now between four Journey Thors, the Mystery of the titles. Thor. Yes, exactly. And then we have a couple Hulks to end this off. So first off, we're going to start with Journey into Mystery, number 124, the A story, of course. This one is titled The Grandeur and the Glory. And we've got Stan Lee writing, hallelujah, right? Jack Kirby on art, Vince Aquilotto on inks, both those guys doing the cover, of course. Hardy Simic's doing letters here, November 1965, release date, 16-page story, and Bill will take this one away.
And given the subject matter, somehow remarkably, this story does not suck.
Yeah.
That's actually a pretty big ask, given what we're covering here. And I attribute it entirely to one character who we'll be re-meeting shortly. Or if and you look at the cover, shortly. You already know who he is.
Yeah. We'll be re-meeting and forgetting shortly.
No, I'm not talking about the demon.
Oh.
The good comes from Hercules.
Oh, I kind of missed the good part.
Yeah, because we Thor jokes fighting with, the demon certainly isn't enough to save this issue. Anyway, having returned to New York City, Thor reads newspaper reports about a being known as the Demon that has been amassing an army in the jungles of Asia. He is soon confronted by average citizens who wonder aloud if Thor will tackle the demon in the future. Thor takes the time to cheer up a little girl whose father has been injured in the Vietnam conflict, because we're topical, and tells her to wish her father well before departing. He travels to the hospital where Jane Foster is recovering from smoke inhalation, and listening from her window, hears the doctors talk of her condition and that she is not getting better but worse. Meanwhile, in Asia, the demon continues to travel across the land, attacking cities with his ever-growing army. Regardless of the resistance, the Nornstone-powered demon manages to withstand all attacks made upon him and crushes foes. While back in the States, Thor has resumed his civilian guise of Donald Blake and entered into Jane Foster's room. At first, Jane figures that Blake is nothing more but an illusion, but realizes that it's really him. Don continues to learn that Jane is suffering a nervous breakdown due to Blake's constant disappearances and decides that regardless of what may happen, he revealed to Jane that he is secretly the mighty Thor. Yes, one of the most important developments in Thor's story happens in the shitty demon issue.
We're in identity reveal in season two.
I think she forgets again. Honestly, I don't remember for sure, but I think Jane ends up forgetting that he's Thor.
I find it kind of wild that some of these identities are coming to light so early on.
Yeah. Changing into his godly identity, Jane now knows Thor's double identity. Thor changes back to his mortal guise and tells Jane that he has to go but will return the next day. Well, on Asgard, Odin witnesses Thor exposing his identity to Jane. Fortunately, that's all it is. It's a PG-13 comic. And is furious and begins contemplating a fitting punishment for this defile. I don't think that's the right uses of that word. Back on Earth, Donald Blake tends to a patient who brings up the current news regarding the demon's invasion of Asia. After hearing radio reports later, Blake finds himself torn between his promise to not abandon Jane and his duty as Thor, and realizes that he cannot shirk his godly duty and decides to fly to Asia to deal with the demon traveling across the Earth faster than ever before, causing a sonic boom of epic proportions. This sound is heard all the way on Mount Olympus, where Zeus decides that it is time once again for the Olympian gods to turn their attention back to Earth. Going to his son Hercules, who is sparring with Atlas, Zeus breaks up the fight and challenges Hercules with a mission to go to Earth and walk amongst mortal men. And once more on Earth, The demon's forces attack yet another village. However, this time they find out that Thor is waiting inside for them. Thor confronts the demon and recognizes the Norn stone that he has tied around his neck. Thor then challenges the demon to a battle, and the two begin a fierce fight. Okay, so I was actually thinking of the next issue with the shitty demon issue that's only saved by Thor, or by Hercules. This one's actually good because of the whole Jane reveal.
Yeah.
That's either way, three stars.
Handled surprisingly well. I gave it three stars as well. I mean, Thor has been, Journey, Thor, whatever you want to call it, has been building up to actually having this reveal happen. But it's
even
still kind of shocking
Thor
to happen
at this
so early.
Point, I feel comfortable saying Thor.
Yeah, they've been calling it Thor for a little bit. They just didn't officially change the title on the cover. But yeah, no, pretty good. Hercules coming in here is great as well. Always down for some Herc. And yeah,
Hercules is one of the biggest surprises I've got from the order. He's up there with Luke Cage. There's characters that I always assumed were just kind of boring and generic that I ended up loving reading through.
Yeah.
Because Hercules is barely used in the modern comics, so he'd show up once in a while in like a team-up issue and be generic strongman number 42, but
he started to become used again now, but right when you were at your peak comic fandom and buying all those comics, he was definitely not used very much or well.
Yeah, they did do like a good one. He had a good miniseries in that event where the Watcher was assassinated.
Oh, yeah, Original Sin.
Yeah, that was good, but he was barely used other than that. And no, my disdain for him came mostly from the 90s.
Fair enough.
He was not used at all except for like a throwaway character in a team-up book.
Fair enough. So yeah, I saw the Thor right there, big developments, and we shall move on to Journey in the Mystery, number 125.
Yeah, this one managed to be good by basically ignoring that the demon existed other than for like four pages.
Yeah, it was best to get that over with as soon as possible, really. I mean, it was kind of annoying that they built him up just to not do anything, but at the same time, it's probably for the best.
I kind of like the way they do handle him, that he's just a total non-issue.
Yeah.
Because that's what he should be. Even with a Norn stone, he's just a guy who found a magic stone.
You're here the job, pal.
Yeah. It would be bad if they made like an actual like three-issue arc of Thor fighting this guy, because he's a joke. Thor should be able to steamroll him in like 5 minutes.
Yeah, get the fuck out of here. Come in, Hercules. There we go. Anyways, issue 125, A Story of Journey in the Mystery. When Meet the Immortals. Stanley, Jack Kirby, Vince Coletta, Artie Simek, all the same team. December 1965 release date, so the last issue of Journey in the Mystery officially being the title is the end of 1965. 1966 starts off fresh. 16-page story, and I will take this one. Thor is in Asia, trying to stop the conquest... Wait, am I on the right one? Yes, I am. Trying to stop the conquest of the demon, an Asian witch doctor whose strength has been enhanced by an orange storm. Stone. As the two battle, it becomes clear that their strength is evenly matched, and wanting to avoid defeat, the demon demands that his soldiers attack Thor with a captured cannon. Thor, noticing that their weapon is more powerful than they suspect, prepares to stop it before they can unleash its power. Meanwhile, in the United States, Hercules is awoken from his first evening on Earth to the sound of a train that cannot progress further down the line due to a fallen tree on the tracks. Hercules decides to use his giant strength to toss the tree aside and asks that the engineer take him to the city that the train is destined to. While back in Asia, Thor plugs the enemy cannon with his hammer, causing it to backfire. Seems pretty dangerous, but whatever. Causing an explosion.
All the victims would be Asian, and it's the 1960s, so no one cares.
Yeah, I think they understand how bad that would be a little bit here, but that's okay. Causing an explosion powerful enough to knock everyone but Thor unconscious. Yeah, I'm sure that's all it did. Using this opportunity...
Oh, no, those guys are dead. It's just comic code. Unconscious.
Yeah. That was one of the most blatant times reading Fear so far with the comic code that I've been like, huh, yeah, those guys are okay. Using this opportunity, Thor reclaims the Norn Stone from the demon, stripping him of his enhanced powers, and his army soon flees. Thor transports himself to Asgard to turn the Norn Stone over to Odin. Thor soon realizes that Odin is furious at him for breaking his decree when he revealed his identity to Jane Foster. The angry Odin refuses to allow Thor to return to Earth unless he passes the Ritual of Steel, where he must fight not only against his best friend Balder, but an army of Asgardians all ordered to slay him. There was a word missing there. It took me a second. Back on Earth, Hercules has been taken in all that New York has to offer, poor guy, eating a grand meal in a dinner club and attracting the attention of a beautiful woman. He has been spotted by a talent scout for a movie studio who wants Hercules to take part in a movie being filmed in California. He takes up playing the guitar for all present when the club is suddenly attacked by masked robbers, hoping to loot the place. However, all present who figured Hercules for an actor playing the role of the famous demigod soon realize that they are dealing with the genuine article when Hercules fights off the robbers and sends them packing. Their getaway is short-lived, however, when Hercules immobilizes their vehicle by throwing a lamppost at it. Which is a hell of a panel, by the way. The lamppost cutting that car partly in half was kind of cool. Hearing the commotion from her hospital room just as she is being discharged, Jane Foster believes that it's coming from Thor, who has kept his promise to return to her the next day. However, when she goes to the street, she finds that it is Hercules who has taken the glory and praise for stopping the crooks. Finding Jane to be very striking, Hercules leaves with the girl, and when the town scout tries to stop him to meet his contractual obligations, Hercules simply stuffs the man in the garbage can and leaves.
Love Herc.
There's a lot of good bits in this comic that are very done.
Hercules
that
not
done
understanding
very
how modern society works is one of my favorite things about that character.
Back on Asgard, Thor has managed to fight off his fellows, even fighting past Heimdall and escaping across the Bifrost Bridge to Earth. When Balder throws himself at the mercy of Odin for failing to slay Thor, Odin forgives him and decides instead to watch what his son intends to do on Earth. There, Thor finds Jane in a restaurant with Hercules and finds that Jane is upset at Thor for once again abandoning her. Pretty understandably. When Thor tries to explain himself, he sees who she is out with and becomes jealous. When Hercules tries to greet his old ally, Thor insults him, which leads to the Prince of Power striking the Thunder God, and thus the first blow in a battle between Thor and Hercules is struck. And that's the end of that one. Pretty good cliffhanger, really.
Yeah. They've been doing good with the cliffhangers on this show, or on this run. Like, even the last issue with he's about to fight the demon. That's a pretty good cliffhanger, even though we know the demon sucks.
Yeah. I gave this one a solid 3 here.
So did I. I was not expecting to give both issues with the demon 3s, but Hercules and Jane Foster stuff saved him.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to say Jane Foster stuff saved a Thor comic that wasn't written in 2000 and... Was it
14 8? Onward.
14 was when she became Thor, yeah.
So yeah, pretty wild. No, Thor's being pretty solidly written right now. It's got a pretty good cast of characters going on, and it's trudging along.
I think it stays pretty consistently good until after Walt Simonson.
Yeah.
So that's something to look forward to. Like, Thor is, at least where I am, is rarely the best comic, but you almost never regret reading it.
Yeah. Sounds about right, from what I've heard.
And I also... it didn't strike me when I was reading these, but listening to you recap it now, I think they stole a lot of Hercules' characterization for Thor 1.
Yeah.
Because Thor was never really like that, but like all the jokes about Thor not fitting in to the real world, that's Hercules.
Yeah, well, this the Thor of these are this that we're reading is not MCU Thor at all, because it's been so tied heavily with the Donald Blake and everything.
Oh yeah, but even beyond that, like the scene where he's in the coffee shop with them and just like flings the coffee mug on the ground and yells for another because he's acting like he's in the Norse meat hall. That's a Hercules thing to do, not a Thor thing to do.
Yeah, they literally did that bit, and it's definitely, yeah. I mean, it's very much, it definitely feels that way. I mean, it's very fitting for Thor in the future, but it's the Hercules now. It certainly feels like a definite inspiration.
Yeah, and even MCU. Thor in the future, he's been Thor on Earth for long enough that he doesn't really get the fish out of water stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas Hercules shows up, he's already a god. He doesn't have to prove his worth or anything.
The complete ignorance of the world around him.
Yeah, and he's been living in Olympus for the last however many millennia, so he has no clue how the modern world works.
Yeah. It's the god version of Captain America.
Yeah.
But anyways, we shall now move on to not Journey into Mystery, but Thor, number 126, the A story. This one settled whom the gods would destroy. We've got the same old team here, and this was released in January 1966, so Happy New Year. We have reached 1966 in this title. 16-page story here, and Bill will take this one away.
I think that's another thing that has this run working so well. It's this creative team for a long time.
Yeah, the consistency is helpful, and I've said this before, but I genuinely think that some of Jack Kirby's best work so far that we've seen has been on Thor.
I'd be comfortable to say some of his best work, period.
Yeah.
Because other than some of the highs from Fantastic Four, nothing I've read touches Thor that he's done.
I would say that technically, consistently, as an artist standpoint, this is his best work so far.
Yeah.
I mean, Fantastic Four has had its bigger moments and been more important, but this is Jack Kirby's as an artist. He just suits Thor.
Yeah, and I think Vince Coletta actually improves his art for Thor, because Kirby likes to do really complicated machinery and stuff.
Yeah.
Which doesn't suit Thor at all. But Coletta is notoriously rather lazy. So he'll cut a lot of that out and just deal with it with shading and stuff. And it makes it look more fantastical and less technological.
Pretty good combo then.
Yeah, they actually work wonderfully together on this book.
Yeah, I just want to... We've talked about that before, but I wanted to say it again because the art in these issues has been pretty solid, has been pretty good.
It's a visual medium. Art's as important as the writing.
Oh, definitely, and we should... If anything, we should probably talk about the art more sometimes, but still...
It's hard to do sometimes unless it's really stand-up.
Yeah, exactly.
Thor and Hercules are fighting over Jane Foster, boatmen's egos preventing an end to the fight. However, the two appear to be evenly matched. While in Asgard, Odin is still furious over Thor's disobedience and first revealing his double identity to Jane and returning to Earth against Odin's wishes. The old father then begins thinking of a suitable punishment for his disobedient son. Any guesses on what it's going to be, because Odin only has one punishment? Back on Earth, Thor and Hercules' battle takes them across the city. Each man tries to outmatch the other, accomplishing nothing more than a lot of collateral damage to the city around them. Their battle eventually leads them to a construction site. As the battle rages on Asgard, Odin has called for Sigring the Merciless to exact a punishment on Thor, to gradually drain his strength to half power. Okay, that's different. Usually he does it immediately. Although I'm pretty sure in the book it's done immediately. In spite of Sidring's reservations, he complies with Odin's wishes, striking Thor with a mystical bolt that will weaken the Thunder God just as Odin commanded. This, of course, turns the tide of battle in Hercules' favor, who begins to beat Thor in combat. However, Hercules realizes that Thor has been weakened and no longer desires to fight an inferior foe. Angered by this, Thor continues his fight, even though his strength is at a low ebb. In trying to defeat Hercules, Thor lifts a heavy construction vehicle and finds that his strength is insufficient to keep the device aloft, prompting Hercules to kick it out of his hands. Thor then collapses to the ground. With the battle over, Hercules is swarmed by spectators, including the talent agent trying to convince Hercules to go to Hollywood and star in a Hercules movie. This time, Hercules accepts the offer and departs. When Thor revives, he finds that the crowd has lost interest in him and mock his easy defeat at the Prince of Power's hands. Feeling the rejection, Thor is confronted by Jane Foster, who says that she only went to lunch with Hercules to make Thor jealous and that she is through to the Thunder God. Feeling that he has lost honor in the face of this defeat, Thor leaves Jane, telling her he will not return until he has restored it in his eyes. Jane is upset until she contacts... Oh god, this is written badly. Not only did they mistake Jane for a dude... Jane is upset until she is contacted telepathically by Odin, who tells her that Thor has fought like a true Asgardian and that he is remorseful towards his son, and tells Jane to go to him. Heeding this command, Jane follows after the Thunder God. And that's the end of this one.
I never saw Thor.
Yeah.
I never
saw it. It's been a while since we had a good battle issue, because this one's basically just a battle, but...
Yeah, that's why, yeah, easily the breeziest read of the bunch, but...
Yeah. We needed that after two issues of the demon who wasn't capable of providing anything in the side of excitement.
In any aspect.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, great. Two gods. It's simple. Two gods clash, and pretty cool. Really,
it worked in the annual. It works again here.
Yeah, and they have,
and their fight had more of a rationale to it than the previous time, where it was like, no, I want to cross the bridge first.
Yeah, and their personalities work. I mean.
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
Thor and Hercules becoming buddies is one of my favorite stories.
So, yeah. Solid one. Never three-star affair. And we shall move on. Because I don't really have anything else to say about that one. Just
now,
the fight
it's
issue
hard
that
to
was
have
really
a lot
solid.
To say about battle issues.
Yeah. But up next is Thor number 127A story. This one is titled The Hammer and the Holocaust. No, not any of that. they just throw that word around these days. But anyways.
There's an uncomfortable amount of fire on that cover for something using the word Holocaust.
You know what? You pointed that out, and that just ruined it.
Oh, actually... so using the word Holocaust is completely fine if you can't draw parallels.
Yeah. Yeah, he pointed out the fire was where we have to draw the line. No, but anyways.
I can't let you have the only black humor of this issue.
Oof, I guess not. But yeah, I mean, they threw the word Holocaust around all the time back in the 60s, apparently, as we've learned by reading these.
I'm not sure. I haven't looked up anything on this, but I don't think it had the stigma yet attached to it that it did here. Because... I mean, the Holocaust was named using an existing word.
Yeah.
And I don't think it quite acquired the exclusivity on that word until later. Because they definitely toned back on how often they'll use it going forward. And at some point, they stop altogether.
Yeah, it must have... gained a stigma / education around the event must have expanded enough that it was like, ooh, probably shouldn't use that, huh?
I'm assuming it's a stigma thing, because even if the general populace wasn't familiar with it, Stan and Jack, as Jewish,
surely
people,
would have been.
Jewish people who served in World War II, most likely were aware.
Yeah, definitely Jack.
Well, Stan is also Jewish.
Yeah. No, he would know too. I'm just, yeah. I was pointing out the serving part of the when I was saying this.
Stan served too.
Yeah, he served later on, right? Because he couldn't go at first because he wasn't of age.
Yeah, he went towards the end of the war, but he'd still be aware of it.
Oh yeah, definitely. It'd be weird if he wasn't. But yeah. The team is all together again, the same. Besides. The letter changed, which, I mean, they have a similar letter in, but we'll still point it out. Sam Bear's in this year Artie Simic here. And this one was released, of course, in February 1966, a 16-page story. And, oh yeah, I was going to say, back to the cover. I actually like this cover.
Oh, this is a great cover.
This is a great cover. Wanted to point that out. We got caught up in the Holocaust talk for a second. But yeah, good cover. And let us get right into the synopsis here. Uh-huh. Believing that he has lost his honor, Thor is confronted by Jane Foster, who tries to get him to forget restoring his honor and that she loves him. Thor is embittered by being the subject of Jane's pity and leaves. Before Jane can do anything more, someone is struck by a car, sending her rushing to the stranger to give the medical aid. Well, in California, preparations for a new Hercules feature film are underway at Stardust Studios. What a name that is. That studio is never going to go anywhere.
It's going to finish Hercules story eventually.
When some of the workers stop to comment on the set designs, they are scared back into the work by the studio owner, JP, who is in reality Pluto, the Olympian god of death and ruler of Hades. With his workers, I forgot about that. Holy shit!
Yeah, I forgot. Actually, I think that might be a mistake. I don't think he's revealed to be Pluto in that issue. I think it's the next one that we haven't officially read for the podcast yet that reveals him to be Pluto.
I think there was some kind of hint because I think there
was something that he was sketchy, but I don't think they revealed that he was Pluto.
I don't remember anymore. It's been a while. Anyways, with his work is gone, he checks with one of his slaves in Hades to make sure all is well.
Okay, then they must have revealed it.
I think
if he's talking to Hades, they revealed it.
I think it was revealed, but it was like glossed over, I think.
Like, yeah, this is probably my faulty memory running on it because, spoilers, that's the next Thor arc is Pluto.
Yeah, this is like them putting it there as a bit of a setup, but I think they kind of relatively glossed over it.
I mean, it's literally the next issue. It feels different because we have to maneuver Hercules into position through some Hulks. But it's literally the next issue starts the Pluto story.
Satisfied that nothing there demands his attention, Pluto begins preparing for the arrival of Hercules. Elsewhere, Thor stops to ponder his lot. And how to restore his honor. I just noticed the funny thing with the synopsis. They were using the honor without a U earlier on, and now there's a U in honor, so that threw me off for a second.
If that's the biggest issue with some of these synopses, we're doing well. Mine identified Jane Foster as a man.
And to be honest, these Thor synopses have been some of the best we've gotten in a while, so...
Yeah, it's probably not an English speaker writing them, but they're pretty good overall.
Doing a pretty good job, really.
It's just awkward sentence structure and occasional word choice that's off on it. I don't want to bury whoever did them, because they actually did a pretty good job.
Yeah. Unaware that he is being watched by the remorseful Odin, who feels fully responsible for doing this to the Thunder God. Odin is then struck down from behind by... Sidring, however you would say that. He hasn't had an adaptation, so I don't know. I want to say it's probably Sidring. Say Sidring?
I was saying Sidring, but I don't know how to pronounce ancient Norse that's possibly been butchered by people who don't know it any better than I do.
We'll go with Sidring, who is attempting to take over Asgard. With Odin defeated, he does just that, and when Balder enters the room to investigate, Sidrun announces that he is the ruler of Asgard. When Thor returns to Asgard, he finds Heimdall encased in a block of ethereal force. and rushes into the city of Asgard to learn what has happened. There he finds his fellow Asgardians, all have been incapacitated, including Baldur. Suddenly, Thor is surrounded in a ring of fire erected by Sidrin, who demands that Thor pledge an allegiance to him or suffer the same fate as his comrades. Thor refuses and walks through the flame to battle Sidrin. While back on Earth, Pluto continues his plot against Hercules, joined by Hippolyta, who is in on the charade, pretending to be an actual. I just don't remember the sapling was where my what came from, but yeah.
Yeah, it is Hippolyta.
Who is in on the charade, pretending. It's like I blocked out all of this Pluto stuff.
I don't believe they actually used her name in that issue.
That's she's why just I'm referred confused,
to
as probably.
The Queen of the Amazons, but it goes forward to actually name her in the future when someone writing Thor or Hercules was more up on the actual mythology.
Yeah. In fact, I guess we can get an answer on that. Yeah, she's just called the Queen of the Amazons in this, so that's why I'm confused. I confirmed that with the site.
Oh yeah, I went into her, I'm like, I think that's right, but I'm not sure, so I went into the site to check.
Hippolyta, who is in on the charade, pretend to be an actress playing the role of herself. Pluto creates an Olympian Pact, a document that makes an eternal pact between those who sign it, the key to Pluto's plot against the Prince of Power. Back on Asgard, Sidrin and Thor battle, Sidrin using his superior mystical powers against Thor, who finds himself initially outmatched and fighting on the defensive. We were not burying the people writing these, and then all of a sudden it became really bad. find himself unable to defeat the Odin power and enhance Sidrin. Thor escapes the chamber of the Oversword. What? Chamber of the... Is that right? Oversword?
Yep.
Okay, I wasn't sure.
They're using the modern term for it. At the time it was called the Odin sword.
Thank you. I was like, that okay,
but eventually someone realized that's a stupid name for a sword and they change it to the Oversword.
Okay. Braving all of Sidrin's mystical attacks, Thor grabs the handle of the sword and threatens to bring out Ragnarok. That might be the first Ragnarok reference, I'm not sure. If Sidrin refuses to surrender back his usurped power to Odin.
I'm not sure if it is or not, because
it gets used a lot.
It's used in Tales of Asgard. In the big overarching Tales of Asgard story, that's the reason we're not reading the B story in these books right now.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it starts being mentioned before this issue or after this issue.
Fair enough. Not wishing to have his life ended, Sidrin returns the power to Odin, who tells Sidrin to leave and that his punishment will come later. Odin then scoops up the exhausted Thor and carries him off, convinced that his son is still the most noble of all Asgard. Ta-da! That synopsis had me fucked up a little bit at times, but we made it through. Another 3-star affair.
Yeah. I mean, this has just been a consistent, good Thor story arc, and that's pretty much the way Thor continues. It just chugs along putting out good comics.
Yeah, and that's all we can really... That's the minimum that we should...
Yeah, I'd much rather have a comic that's consistently threes than one that hits some fives and then also has some twos and ones mixed in there.
Yeah. It's just a solid ordeal. But I don't have much more to say about that one. Let's move on to Tales to Astonish number 75 B story. We're getting back to some Hulk action. This one's titled Not All My Power Can Save Me. We've got Stan Lee writing, Jack Kirby and Mike Esposito on the art. By the way, Jack Kirby is not going to be the solo artist on Hulk much longer, by himself at least.
I think that literally changes next issue.
Yes, that's why I mentioned it. Inks by Mike, I think it's next issue. If not, it's the one after, starting next week's
episode. No, I think it's next issue, because I think I read the one where it changed for this week.
Probably. Inks by Mike Esposito as well. Cover art by Jack Kirby and Vincent Coletta. Sam Rosen is on letters. October 1965 release date, 10-page story. And Bill will take this one away.
All right. Oh, don't want to read that one. That was the Submariner.
Yeah, we don't want to read that again.
Yeah. With the leader seemingly killed by the Watcher's ultimate machine, the Hulk leaves the leader's hideout with the ultimate machine. They could have just said it. To figure out what he should do next. While back at the military base, General Ross is overseeing the final implementation of the T-Ray, the last invention of Bruce Banner. Betty visits her father to try to appeal to him to release Rick Jones, who has been prisoner for being the only person who may know the Hulk's true identity. While out in the desert, the Hulk tries to use the ultimate machine, and it broadcasts to him the whereabouts of Rick. Finding out that the boy is in trouble, and only appealing to the president at the White House will free him, Hulk leaves the ultimate machine behind to go and save his friend. After being left unattended, the Watcher has the ultimate machine returned to his home. The Hulk travels to Washington, D.C. to land... I see what they're saying. It was an awkwardly phrased sentence, but it is correct. The Hulk's travels to Washington, D.C. land the Hulk in conflict with the military once more. They missed a comma and it made it really confusing. And before the Hulk can breach the White House, he is blasted with the T-Ray. When the blinding flash ends, the Hulk finds himself in a post-apocalyptic future where soldiers have arrived to take him prisoner. And that's where this one leaves off.
Ta-da.
And you know, for a transition issue, this one's not bad.
No, this is a solid transition issue. I gave this a 3.
I did too. It wasn't as good as the Thors, but...
But we're reading Hulk, so...
Yeah, and it flowed along. Well, Hulk gets to the pretty consistent 3 level. We're not quite there yet, but it gets there soon.
I needed an opportunity to bury Hulk at some point, so
yeah,
I took
it. Yeah, it still has a lot of atoning to do for that old Incredible Hulk series we had to cover near the start.
Yeah. Oh, shit. We'll have more time to bury Hulk here, though, because we're heading into issue 76 of Tales to Astonish, the B-Story. This one is titled I Against the World. We've got Stan Lee right in here. Gil Kane is doing the art, who is on art next time either. So they're playing with artists a lot right now. We've got Mike Esposito on inks. Gene Colan and Vince Cloud did the cover since it's a Namor spotlight. Artie Simic on letters. November 1965 release date. 10-page story. And I will take this one away. Do-do-do-do. Having been transported to a dystopian future by the T-Ray, the Hulk finds himself attacked by an army of future warriors led by King Arkham. Not spelled like the Arkham you might be thinking of. Realizing the Hulk's power, Arkham has the Hulk knocked out with a barrage of Delta missiles, which keep the Hulk distracted long enough for them to use their Captivator weapon to incapacitate and take the Hulk prisoner. In present-day Washington, D.C., General Ross and Glenn Talbot try to figure out what happened to the Hulk after they shot him with the T-Ray, under pressure from their superiors for results. Back in this distant future, the Hulk has taken to Arkham Citadel. When the Green Goliath comes to, he is taken to Arkham. The King asks for the Hulk's aid in stopping Arkham's arch-nemesis in exchange for returning the Hulk back to his own time upon victory. The Hulk, not interested in the offer, goes on a rampage demanding to be sent back to his own time right away. During his rampage, Arkham's castle is attacked by the opposing forces who attack on giant tripod vehicles. The Hulk begins attacking them, smashing open the lead tripod to reveal the executioner inside, and the stories continue next issue.
So what the Hulk found was disappointment.
I like the executioner.
I like the executioner, not in the first of many Marvel badly done War of the World ripoffs.
It's arguably the best part of this issue, but this issue isn't very good, so it's...
Yeah, when I said disappointment, I was referring to this issue as a whole, not specifically Executioner.
Yeah, no, this issue kind of sucks. I gave this a 2.
So did I.
And this ruined the perfect streak of threes for this episode. Right at the end. Just not very good or interesting. I don't like the idea of suddenly being in a different time. It's not done well here. Not done interestingly here.
I never enjoy... Surprise! It's a modern villain in this dystopic future we found that they use quite a bit. If you're going to go the dystopic future route, at least use Kang.
Yeah, it also doesn't make sense why Executioner is there, but I mean...
I think next issue we'll get a bad explanation of it.
Yeah, they say something about it. It's one of the ones I read last night, but...
It's not a good reason why he's there, but...
No, and he wants,
like... They do try to explain it.
He wants to have, like, recognition when he goes back to Asgard or some bullshit. It's stupid, but whatever. Yeah, I don't know. That wasn't very good. The stuff with General Ross and Talbot and stuff was decent, and that was the best part besides Execution showing up at the end. Yeah, that
subplot carried this. Because when I said it was a 2, it was a high 2, because I did like the Ross and Talbot stuff. It's just the Hulk story was so boring.
Well, the side cast of characters is starting to be pretty decent in Hulk now, too.
Yeah, that's really why it starts becoming consistent. In a while, they'll bring in Doc Samson, they'll get some more side cast characters.
This might be the last time we see Ross for like a few issues, or the next one is, but Ross kind of disappears for an issue coming up.
I think it's the next one, because he is on the cover in the next one.
Yeah, I think he's in the next one at the start, and then he kind of disappears up to where I've read for an issue or so.
I think he's still gone on the issue after, because if I remember correctly, and it's been like 5 years since I've read that, I'll have to reread him this week, but I think that's pretty much just a battle issue.
Yeah, and then and you can tell the biggest thing with the art change in here is Betty looks like she aged 20 years.
Yeah.
And it has like gray hair and shit in these issues.
Well, the shorter gray hair is a coloring issue.
Yeah, it's a coloring issue, but her hair is also noticeably shorter too or whatever. Yeah. Like it's all...
Oh yeah, Romita draws Betty very different. Probably because he's trying to give her an individual look. Because, as we've mentioned numerous times on this podcast, Kirby draws one woman and changes her hair.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's nice she has a different look in these issues, but at the same time, it's very jarring. There's a rough
patch, but once Marie Severin takes over drawing this, she'll kind of settle out into her established model,
hopefully. But yeah, that was a poor comic to end the week, but
unfortunately. Oh well. We had all the good stuff and then we had a bad issue to end, and we pick up with another good one next week.
Yeah, we end up in a good stretch. Because surprise, next week,
the Executioner makes this arc better than not the Executioner.
We will talk about what we're covering next week now while we're at it. We will continue getting through this little Hulk stretch that we're on. We're going back to Thor after that. That's why I messed up for a second. But Hulk.
Yeah, like I said, this is really just to maneuver Hercules into position.
Yeah. Tales to Astonish, the Beast stories of issues 77 through 79 will be covered first. And then we get back to Thor with a 3-issue stretch for Thor 128 through 130A stories.
I love this arc, the Thor arc that we're getting.
Yeah. That'll be it should be a solid episode considering how high Bill just built Thor, and I've already enjoyed the Hulk so far, so.
Yeah, the Hulk's not bad. And the next one's good because it's got Hercules in it, because you've read 2 more. But then it's one of my favorite Thor arcs because it does what I think Thor does best, which is deal with mythology. I'm a little lower on the sci-fi Thor stuff.
Yeah. Fair enough. But yeah, no, pretty solid episode overall today. We're not quite done yet, though, because we are going to do our end of the month stuff for last month, March, and this month's only 2 episodes of April. We did 3 episodes last month, 2 episodes this month. Scheduling has been Pretty interesting. But yeah, I've just had my real work schedule has become interesting, so it's been hard to work around recently, but hopefully that settles out soon and we get back on track.
Hopefully, if nothing else, we can keep doing Saturday recordings until it does settle out.
Yeah.
The comics are getting better, so it's less of a chore to prepare for these.
Yeah. No, hopefully it will. Hopefully I can, because I actually, like, I'm where we are also in terms of recording to where I'm reading, so I actually have to make sure I've read the stuff so we can record too. Okay. So yeah. Well, that should hopefully not be as much of a struggle, hopefully, going forward. But anyways, we will move on to our end of the month stuff. We have our pull list and then best and worst comic of the month sections. We're going to start with the pull list like normal. And we'll run down the titles, I suppose, which would be Fantastic Four, Tales to Astonish, Journey into Mystery, which is becoming Thor, Strange Tales, Tales of Suspense, Amazing Spider-Man, Surgeon Fury, and Silent Commandos, X-Men, Daredevil. So, I guess for my change, I mean, we're getting rid of Journey into Mystery because Thor is taking over, is what the title's called. So I'm guessing both of us are keeping Thor, right?
Oh, yeah. Thor's getting good. I'm not cutting it now.
Exactly. The only other change for me, which is the same change for you.
We could hypothetically keep Journey into Mystery because we dip back into it for Tales of Asgard, but I'm comfortable with changing it at this point since we're switching over to the new, or since the Ace stories are switching over, and it gets confusing to keep it under two different titles.
Yeah, and we would have, I mean, we kept
it
anyway
for the
A
stories.
If we're pulling
it for the A stories, we're going to be pulling it whether the B stories are good or not.
Yeah, exactly. So, my only other change, I don't know if you have any other ones, but you also said you were doing this to me, is getting rid of X-Men. X-Men is going off
the exact
same
change I'm making. I'm also dropping X-Men.
Not good.
Yeah. So, you're still ahead of me on pulls because you're still keeping Avengers.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't talked about Avengers this entire period, so I'd be surprised if you're going to change it.
No, I'm keeping it. I think I had gotten rid of it just to add it back because it got kind of good again, is what I think happened last time.
Yeah, it's the last entry in your list, so I think we might have added it in.
I think I added it back last time because Avengers, I liked the last stretch of Avengers comics.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. For our best and worst, I'll give us a quick summary of what we covered. We had Daredevil 14 with the shitty Kesar trial in London. Sergeant Fury 27, where Fury fights alone. A big hunk of Tales of Suspense Ace stories, where Iron Man fights a bunch of one-off villains, then the freak arc happens, and then Ultimo with the Mandarin. We get Tales of Suspense 77 B story with the Captain America flashback to World War II and Peggy. Amazing Spider-Man, we get a Kraven issue and a Molten Man issue. Two Sergeant Furies that I don't remember what either one of them was now. Sergeant Fury tends to be pretty samey.
It's the
It's A Man Shall Remain Alive in Armageddon, but I don't remember what happens in those.
It's the two-parter where Fury's facing off with Strucker and they're in that
town. Yeah, okay. That was actually pretty good. We have X-Men 19 with the Mimic. Spider-Man 36 with the Cat Burglar. X-Men 20 and 21.
Weird. It seems like
Lucifer arc.
Did you skip over Daredevil 15 on purpose, or was that just like...
That was a complete accident because I scrolled down and I missed that. Yeah, between X-Men 19 and Spider-Man, we had Daredevil 15 with Ox. Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos, the one where they go to the concentration camp in Italy.
That's the one with Dino being a pervert.
Yes. Spider-Man 37 with the shitty robots. Daredevil 16 to 19 with the Spider-Man two-parter and the Gladiator two-parter. And then all the stuff we covered today.
Yeah. So, on that note, we normally start with our worst to go end on the high note. So, worst. You go first.
Like all right. Do. X-Men number 20, I, Lucifer.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Because that Lucifer arc sucked, and I remember that one being the worst part of it.
Yeah. Fair enough. You know what? I joked that I was going to give it to Daredevil 14, but I changed my mind and remembered how god-awful that X-Men arc was once I looked at what we were covering. So I'm going to give it the 21 because it was bad enough I had to read one issue of it, but when it was the second issue, I remember really struggling to read it. I think I was on like page 14 and like had to come back to it the next day or something at one point. So
I can believe that X-Men is not only terrible, but also very wordy.
Yeah, that we covered both the terrible X-Men, so that's great. Yeah.
I don't mind wordiness when it's a good comic. I mean, God, Claremont X-Men is super wordy, but it's worth it because the story is actually interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it requires an interest story to want to read all that.
I don't need to read 8 panels of dialogue about fucking Lucifer.
Oh my God, Lucifer was so bad.
And now we move on to the best of the month.
Yeah. Yeah, you go first again.
All right. This is kind of funny given my accident when I was reading these. There's not really a standout high point this month, so I picked the one that surprised me the most for being not as bad as I thought it was going to be, and that was Daredevil 15 with Holy the Ox, shit. Which was actually a really interesting story.
That is not what I thought you chose.
No, I actually really liked the take on the Ox there.
I mean, it is good. I did not think that was your choice when you told me.
I don't think I've really gone higher than 3 stars this entire month. And that was the one I was least expecting to give 3 stars that I did.
Yeah. No, it's just when you said earlier whatever you said, that was not what I was expecting. I honestly,
I was going to surprise you with that one.
I totally thought you went with the Ultimo issue of Iron Man with what you said earlier. But yeah, anyways, my best has actually been throwing a swerve because I kind of forget about some comics this month. I had 2 options that I was stuck between being that Iron Man I just talked about and then the Amazing Spider-Man that was technically my, one of the best rated comics of the month, that Kraven issue. But I forgot that we had Sergeant Fury this month and I really enjoyed the Sergeant Furies this month, especially that two-parter. So I
enjoyed them too, but there's nothing unique about them, so I'm probably never going to give them my best comic again unless they do something like kill another Howler.
I'm going to give it to the second part of the two-parter.
All right, Rory Thomas 29.
Took over, issue 29.
That was a really good comic. I almost gave it to that.
I completely overlooked the Furies when I was looking through these comics earlier, and now that's that you...
easy enough to do given that they're in a different order.
Now that we've pointed it out again, I remembered how much I like those. I was hesitant on giving it to the Spider-Man Kraven issue because even though the Kraven issue was with these Furies my highest rated fan of the month, it wasn't really a standout. Like you said about Fury, it didn't really stand out for being. That's why I was actually going to give it to the Iron Man Ultimo issue for making me like a big giant robot.
Makes sense, because Spider-Man's been struggling under the weight of Stan and Steve's degrading relationship this month.
Yeah. So I didn't really want to give it to Spider-Man.
I knew from the start that no Spider-Mans we covered this month were going to get it, because even if they were amongst the better stuff we talked about, I remember the previous month where Spider-Man was way better.
Yeah, if it wasn't for Fury coming back on my radar, I was going to give it to that that yeah. last Iron Man with
so
all
you were
kind of
in the same boat as I was, in the one that surprised you more rather than the one that was just good.
Exactly, and that's why I thought you chose that one too, because you said that it surprised you, and I was thinking back to us both being shocked by Ultimo.
Yeah, but I've been enjoying Iron Man more than you have, I think is the difference.
Fair. And Ox was a shock too. I just completely forgot about
that
story.
Yeah, I was not expecting that depth of characterization given the quality of stuff we've been getting in Daredevil with, like, the Kazar stories and so.
See, I think why I overlooked that too is I'm more used to Ox actually having a surprising amount of depth, because I've read more of stuff of Ox in it.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm kind of used to that in the modern era. I was not expecting that from a 1965 Daredevil story written by Stan Lee.
Oh, hell no. Especially in Daredevil, which is, like, the worst ongoing title.
I disagree.
Actually, it's not. X-Men is right now.
But... Yes. Thank you.
Thanks for letting me correct myself.
X-Men is the worst, but that's not for lack of trying from Daredevil.
No, it certainly isn't. It's just that Daredevil actually had a few good ones this month.
And every time Daredevil, like, starts challenging for the bottom spot, X-Men reveal a new low.
Yeah. I would say
X-Men bothers me more than Daredevil, because Daredevil is consistently mediocre, like, through the 80s or into the 80s when Frank Miller joins.
Yeah.
But X-Men in the initial run before they get sent into reprints have moments of brilliance that make you think they're turning it around, and then 2 issues later they're shit again.
Yeah, and like, X-Men is also like, Daredevil's really good and very popular nowadays, but X-Men's like still an echelon above as a property than Daredevil.
Yeah. I mean, X-Men and Spider-Man are the reasons I'm into reading comics.
Exactly, so... And X-Men, you know how great X-Men can be, so to see how not good it could be kind of sucks.
Yeah, I don't know, that doesn't bother me the same way I'm expecting with, like, 60 years of difference, that stuff is going to be of different quality than I'm used to.
Well, yeah, but, like, almost unreadable at times is,
yeah,
the difference, I think. Yeah. Anyways, we finally got back to recording an episode for you guys. We finally got our end of the month stuff in. And we had a pretty good time doing it, I would say. I thought this turned out pretty decent.
Yeah, I was looking forward to recording this one, because we're finally getting to the point where I actually like most of the stuff we're talking about.
Yeah, I'm personally excited to go finish reading next week's comics, especially after Bill's excitement for Thor. So hopefully we have a solid episode next time for you guys. Hopefully it'll be next week and we'll get back on track with weekly episodes, but we'll see what happens. But we shall go into wrapping this bad boy up, and hope you all enjoyed. If you're watching on YouTube, please leave a like, comment, subscribe, and even share if you would like to. We are also available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. And of course, if you're watching on Spotify, click that big old poll. Let us know why Executioner in the far distant future is your favorite.
I was going to cite that, like, shitty king that the Hulk was fighting before Executioner showed up and made things better.
Oh, yeah.
But I couldn't be arsed to go back and look up his name. I already closed the comic site.
You know, I had literally already forgotten about that character, so until you just said it again. Because I begrudgingly read that all. But anyways, we will see you all next time.
I don't know if I would have reread it if it wasn't the last comic we needed to cover.
I wouldn't have blamed you, honestly, if you just said winged it.
I might have, but it was the last one. I'm like, I'm already this far. I can read one more.
Yeah. Anyway, guys, we will see you all next time, whenever that shall be. And peace out.
Have a good one, everyone.
Hopefully more wrestling content coming soon as well.
Yeah.